Radio Land. I'm Mark, and I'm drinking at KJ's in Morris, Illinois, and you're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. Yeah.
Yeah, Mark. Get it, Mark? Wow. Sounds like a great night over at KJ's in Morris. Woo! Hopefully you made it home okay. Welcome to Outside the Loop. This, you never know, you know? You never know. Welcome to Outside the Loop. This is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Stevens. So nice to have you here with us today. And what we do here on this show, here on, there we go, has some headphone issues. There we go. The show number 616 is we take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. And, of course, we're having a lot of fun here in the Allstate Skyline Studios. That is where we are broadcasting from today on Wacker Drive. We hope that you check out the podcast of the show. It is free, so wherever you get your podcasts, be sure to subscribe to it. And check out OutsideTheLoopRadio.com and WGNRadio.com. Lots to do on the program today. Coming up, we will talk about some issues of transportation equity when it comes to bicycles and who is getting bike tickets. So you can, look, you can get a ticket if you are breaking the rules of the road on your bicycle. That's a thing. It's never happened to me, but I don't know of anyone that it's happened to, but apparently it's happening in certain communities and more so than in other communities. So we will look into that issue. And we'll talk with someone who is running for alderman for the very first time in the 33rd Ward. You know, we talk about politics a good amount here on this show and really in Chicago. It's part of our conversation. And so we will meet someone who is running for alderman for the very first time, who is inspired to do so after the 2016 election. And, of course, Steve Krakow, local music historian. He is also known as Plastic Crime Wave. He's also a musician, a very good one, and a great artist. He does the Secret History of Chicago music column in The Reader. And we will learn about Marvin Smith, who was a soul singer here in Chicago in the 1960s and 70s. That's all coming up on the program today. We say good morning to Colin Seaman. Hi, Colin.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. You produce the program, right?
Yeah.
That's what I'm told.
That's what I do.
Domati is in the newsroom. Good to see you, man.
I'm told I do the news here, too.
You do the news so well.
And breaking news, Mark did get home safe.
Mark, man, I got worried for a second.
He's a really good guy. I have to speak very highly of Mark. He's a fantastic individual. Compassionate guy.
But? Is there a but here?
No, there's not a but here. There's actually a question that I have for you and Domati.
Yes.
Based kind of on Mark and also some other things. So I had the privilege, I've known Mark for a while. He's an awesome guy. I was out visiting him and his wife out in Morris. And I recently shot their wedding video.
Okay.
And it was really kind of crazy, not crazy, but cool to see Mark's daughter got married. And, you know, like most fathers get married and at least see their daughters, you know, all dressed up, they tend to cry.
Sure.
Right. And it made me think, when was the last time I cried? And so my question to you two is, when is the last time that you had a good cry? I thought about this and then it actually happened to me this week.
You cried this week?
Yeah. And it's the strangest thing. And I'm not talking about, like, you know, you read the news and you cry every day. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, like, when was the last time, maybe like
a, taking my cop out.
Maybe when was the last time you maybe, like, a piece of popular art? In this case, I hate to admit this, but I'll own it. Shuffle was on, Coldplay's Fix You started playing, and it just got to me.
Oh, man. Here's the thing. Older Coldplay, I'd be with you on. But the newer Coldplay, not so much.
Well, the technically Fix You came off X and Y. That's like 2004, 2005.
Is it really?
Is that considered old Coldplay?
I'm before that, man.
So rack your brains for a second. When was the last time a piece of art, popular art, film, song, whatever, actually got to you?
Ooh.
I can tell you this. This week was my wedding anniversary. I remember vividly, I teared up a little bit when Jenny was walking down the aisle 9 years ago at our wedding.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, that was an incredible sight.
That's good.
Yeah.
It's good to have a good cry every now and then.
I mean, I didn't sob. I got a little, like, emotional.
Can you think back to, and I guess this is just like a commentary on where we are and how everybody's so just hardened on the outside. Can you think back to a moment where something that wasn't emotionally tied to you, it was just something that you were observing, actually got to you?
Yeah. When Obama's speech in 2008 in Grant Park.
Yeah.
For sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mine was, I was the first time I heard the song Best Part by Daniel Caesar and a singer called Her. Have you guys heard of Her?
Yes.
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 They have a beautiful ballad together. And I remember I was with my lady and we were having some spat, some dispute over something. And I said, just listen to this music. Everybody just relax. Listen to this music. So I pulled up Tidal and I kid you not, I pressed the first song that I saw on my thing. I was just trying to get out of the conversation. So I pressed it, and it's this beautiful ballad. And she's like, oh, my God, I forgive you for whatever it is that I did. Because you know we're always wrong when we argue with our ladies. And so, but that, I mean, it was an emotional moment because I was like, thank you, God. I did not pick this song. She thought I played it because it made me think of her. But really, it was just the luck of the draw.
Well, look, here's the thing, guys. We don't need to cry this morning unless it's so beautiful. This show is so beautiful that you want to have a good emotional release.
Right, if the urge comes across, then go with it.
That's okay. Embrace that.
I didn't mean to get deep, but I had to pick your guys' brains on it. When was the last time?
That was a good one. And I like the caveat, unrelated to something connected to us.
You know what?
Because we are so hardened. We are, we got the shield up all the time. When did something actually make it through? That's what I was curious about.
The movie, do you guys remember the movie with Adam Sandler? Now, hold on. Big Daddy?
I remember
Big Daddy film?
I can't say I saw it.
I don't know when this came out, years ago.
Please tell me it didn't make you cry.
At the end. Yep, at the end. I don't know why. I didn't have any kids when I saw that film. I don't know what was going on, but I teared up at the end of Big Daddy. I will admit it. Right? Is this on? Hello? Hello?
It is. It
Hello?
Is.
Hello?
That's because you are the Big Daddy, Mike.
Oh, thank you, Colin. Thank you. Can we put that on the Outside the Loop promotional
gear? That'll be on all the drops.
Right. Great. All the swag, the t-shirts, the Lala bracelets.
Let's not get too carried away.
Big Daddy Mike.
Thank you. All right. We will take a short break. We will be right back. The show is going to get, it's upbeat. We're not crying.
The show
today.
Is great, by the way.
The show is great. We got a good one this morning. Stay right there. You're listening to Outside the Loop. Mike Steven here with you on 720 WGN. WGN, Mike Steven here with you on Outside the Loop. Nice to have you along. Welcome to the program. Right now, listening to some local music from the band Stardust Encounter. Check them out online, stardustencounter.bandcamp.com. They played last night at the Elbow Room in Lincoln Park. And according to their website, they have a show coming up on Saturday, August 18th at a place called Crowbar. That's at 4001 East 100 6th Street, East 106th Street in Chicago. Each week, I love to feature local music here on this show. And this morning, hearing some tunes from Stardust Encounter. And right now we turn to some issues of local transportation, as we sometimes do here on the show. And we welcome our pal John Greenfield. He is the editor of Streets Blog Chicago. That's online at chi.streetsblog.org. And he is the transportation columnist for the Chicago Reader. John, welcome back to Outside the Loop. Nice to talk to you again, man.
Oh, it's good to be back, Mike.
So a lot going on as always, but the first thing I'd like to address here, you wrote about this recently in the Reader, and I think this is interesting. There's some issues of equity in transportation, and so here's the thing: if you didn't know it, you can get a ticket
for breaking bike laws. So if you're riding your bicycle and you're in Chicago, if you ride on the sidewalk, you're technically not supposed to do that in most cases, and you can get a ticket. But the issue here is, who is getting ticketed for this? According to the Chicago Police Department, as you write about, John, the area around North Lawndale has seen more tickets written for biking on the sidewalk than any other area in the city over the past 2 years. Can you explain what this issue is?
Sure. This is an issue that Mary Vishnevsky, the transportation reporter for the Chicago Tribune, first uncovered in early 2017. She did an analysis of tickets for bike infractions in Chicago, things like biking on the sidewalk, riding against traffic, riding without lights. You know, these are laws that in some cases should be enforced. If people truly are acting recklessly, then it makes sense for police to give them tickets. Mm-hmm. But in many cases, people are getting tickets for, you know, pretty much victimless crimes, riding on sidewalks in locations that aren't crowded, not at high speeds. But anyway, Mary found that a disproportionate number of bike tickets were being written in communities of color, particularly majority black neighborhoods, also some Latino neighborhoods and mixed black and Latino areas, compared to majority white areas. So, you know, the most extreme example of this was in North Lawndale, where, you know, she found this in 2017. There was some discussion of it with the city, different transportation advocates, such as Obai Reed from the group Equiticity Transportation mm-hmm. Justice Group. But Mary did another study of it in early 2018 and found nothing had changed. So she found in 2017, 397 bike tickets were written in North Lawndale. And during the same period, only 5 bike tickets were written in Lincoln Park. So that meant, in effect, North Lawndale residents or people biking in North Lawndale were almost 80 times as likely to get ticketed for bike infractions than people in Lincoln Park, even though Lincoln Park's a very bike-friendly neighborhood and it's not unusual to see people riding against traffic or riding without lights or riding on the sidewalk there. So in June, at the Mayor's Bicycle Advisory Council meeting, a Chicago Police Department representative was there. And he said they'd analyzed more than 3,300 tickets for sidewalk riding. And what they figured out is that the areas that had a high concentration of tickets were also areas with a high incidence of violent crime. And the way he explained it is that in areas like that, traffic enforcement, both vehicle enforcement and bike ticketing, is used as an anti-violent strategy. That they use the tickets as an opportunity to conduct searches, you know, check people for illegal guns, drugs, and outstanding warrants. So basically, he said this is what's going on. He argued that it was not a racial profiling issue because the people getting ticketed in these communities of color simply reflect the demographics of the communities. And he also indicated that the police department doesn't intend to change this policy.
So it's interesting because in other parts of the city, it's not like these crimes don't exist, yet people aren't getting ticketed on their bicycles. Yet in these areas of color, people are. So, you know, and I hear what he's saying, but I feel like that might not hold up, that argument.
Yeah. And obviously we're not talking about crimes here. We're talking about infractions, mm-hmm. you know, people breaking the rules of the road. Now, you know, there's a couple issues here. Some people would respond to this by saying, why don't they just write more bike tickets in white neighborhoods? You know, that's a valid argument in some ways that they could level the playing field by writing 400 tickets in Lincoln Park this year, so that they'd be getting the same number of tickets as in North Lawndale. I'd argue that that would be a waste of police resources because it's not bicyclists who are injuring or killing other road users in large numbers. You know, everyone on the road should be behaving safely, but, you know, I'd be happy to see zero tolerance enforcement of bike laws once the police start doing something about reckless driving, which is a much more destructive behavior. But anyway, the big issue here is the question of, is it fair, is it good policy for the police department to conduct zero tolerance bike enforcement in black and Latino neighborhoods as an anti-violent strategy, which is what they admit they're doing? You know, that's one thing that's very clear here. The police are not denying that they are using bike ticketing essentially as an excuse for stop and frisk. Now, the question is that a good idea or not?
And so going forward here, I mean, the police say that they're going to keep doing this policy, but, you know, I've talked about issues of equity before on this program, and I've talked with folks who are involved in issues of equity across Chicago, and we do have a serious racial problem in Chicago. And part of that, you know, you have to look at how the justice system is being applied, and you could say, oh, well, there's a lot of criminals and crime in these areas. Well, I mean, that may be the case. However, there are a lot of people who are innocent who feel like they are being criminalized just because they live in a particular area. It seems to me that this policy is perpetuating that.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a number of positive things we can do to improve the situation. You know, as Mary Vishnevsky pointed out in some of her reporting on the issue, you know, it's possible that there's a higher rate of law breaking in some of the neighborhoods that are seeing higher tickets, but part of that might have to do with the fact that conditions for biking are less safe there. I mean, there's definitely fewer miles of bike lanes, and the west side and the south side have a lot, they have a higher percentage of wide, high-speed roads. You know, biking on the North Lakefront neighborhoods is just by nature safer because of the geography. So if we were to do things like address the infrastructure by putting in more bike lanes, doing what's called a road diet, where you convert excess lanes on a road to wider sidewalks or bike lanes to help slow down cars, you know, keep people from speeding, that would help. I was talking about this issue with Alex Wilson from Westtown Bikes. It's a bike education center where most of the kids go in there. Most of the youth are Black and Latino. And he said that, you know, his students already feel like they're being targeted for being youth of color. And policies like this just breed more resentment.
Check out chi.streetsblog.org. That is the website for Streets Blog Chicago. John Greenfield is the editor of Streets Blog Chicago. He's also the transportation columnist at the Chicago Reader. John, it's always a pleasure to talk to you about local transportation. And thanks for all your hard work, man. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot, Mike.
Again, check out what John is writing in the Chicago Reader and at Streets Blog Chicago. You're listening to Outside the Loop. I'm Mike Steven right here on 720 WGN. WGN. Good morning. Mike Steven here with you on Outside the Loop. Nice to be here with you, broadcasting from the Allstate Skyline Studio on Wacker Drive in downtown Chicago. Right now, listening to some local music from the band Stardust Encounter. Kind of trippy. I like it. Stardustencounter.bandcamp.com is their website. They had a big show last night at the Elbow Room in Lincoln Park in Chicago. Their EP release show. Their new EP, Perception Management, or is it hashtag Perception Management? It's hashtag Perception Management. Each week, I love to feature local music here on this program. If you are a local musician or if you are a singer-songwriter, you're in a band, go ahead and send us some of your tracks. We'll get those on the radio for you and mention the gigs that you have coming up this week here in some local tunes from Stardust Encounter. Coming up in early 2019, Chicagoans will have the chance to go to the polls to vote for citywide offices. All 50 aldermen are up for re-election. And on the northwest side of Chicago, 33rd Ward Alderman Deb Mell is being challenged, and she's being challenged by Katie Siraki, who is the candidate for 33rd Ward Alderman. Her website is katie2019.com, and she is on the phone with us today. Katie, welcome to the show. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk with you as well. Thanks for having me, Mike.
You bet. So what I'm thinking about here is, you know, we talk about aldermen and we, you know, sometimes don't talk about them in the most positive of ways, but we have to understand that it's an elected office and it's a very important office, as all offices are, especially when it comes to local politics. And so what we're thinking about here is, you know, what don't we know? What's it like running for alderman? So the first question I just have to ask you here is, why are you running for alderman?
Yeah, and that's a great question. It's always the first question everyone asks. And for me, I got my start in politics very young. I knocked on the first doors with my parents for our township supervisor race at the age of 9. But it was really after the election of 2016 that I realized, after going to the Women's March in D.C., that I needed to be involved a lot more. And so it was around this time that Maya Pawar had announced his gubernatorial run here in Illinois, and I knew that I wanted to get involved on a local level, so I became a volunteer for his campaign, and later on also for Sol Flores for her congressional run, and then later for Daniel Biss as well. And it was through those three campaigns that really inspired me to think about going into public service, because I really was inspired by their genuine desire to help their communities and really put the service in public service. And so once those campaigns ended, I was looking for a way for me to get even more involved in my community, and realized that the best way for me to do that was to run for alderman. People here in the 33rd Ward are ready for a change, and they're ready for not the old Chicago way. And their role of alderman is really unique, because you get to help people on a hyper-local level. You get to make sure that they're getting the city services they need. But the other part of the job, of course, is to serve as a legislator on city council, and to an opportunity to show real leadership on the city level. And so those are the reasons that I decided that this was the race that I wanted to run, and the community that I love and the community that I want to serve.
And what are some of the things that the folks in the 33rd Ward are talking about, are concerned about? It's the area we're talking about. That ward goes all the way north to Foster, Diversey to the south, areas of Western to the east. It kind of zigzags, and Kimball and I think Kedzie to the west. But what are some things that people are talking about or concerned with?
Yeah, and you're right. So the neighborhoods that here in the 33rd Ward are part of Albany Park, Ravenswood Manor, Irving Park, and part of Avondale. And there are, you know, a few issues, and I think at the end of the day, people really want their city services. So people really want to make sure that their potholes get filled and their streetlights turn on. So certainly that's part of it. But beyond that, people want to make sure that we are getting economic investment in our neighborhood without displacing current residents. And that's certainly something that we're feeling here in the 33rd Ward, is that push of gentrification. So we want to make sure that we are getting investment in our neighborhoods without displacing current residents. So that's a top priority for the people here in these neighborhoods. And obviously everyone wants safe streets as well.
So here we are. It's very early in your campaign. But what have you found out so far that maybe you didn't know, you didn't expect? Where are we with your campaign right now?
We're about 2 months in. And I will say that it's been a growth process already as a first-time candidate, and I am excited to carry on with this campaign for the next 7 months or so. I am starting to feel the energy from the people I've been talking with at the doors. People are really hungry for change. I'm hearing from a lot of residents, they don't necessarily feel that they're getting the representation that they want in city council. They're looking for a true independent voice. They're looking for someone who's really responsive to their issues. And it's starting to feel that momentum. We're building a grassroots, women-driven, mom-led, actually, campaign here. And I was out door knocking this past week, and I passed a couple who was out walking with their toddler, and I was recognized. She said, "Hey, I know you. You're the lead lady," because we're actually working on an initiative right now to put a referendum on the November ballot asking the city council to hold public hearings about lead in our water. So she is now drumming up some support from her other mom friends as well. So it's been a growth process already, and we're really at an exciting and growing phase of our campaign.
You're going up against a political powerhouse, the Deb Mell from the Mell family, Dick Mell, of course, a longtime legislator here in Illinois, and the connection to Blagojevich, you know, through marriage, of course, with that family. But there's a lot of political clout there. How does that factor into what you do? Does that make a difference? Is it sort of like this uphill battle?
Well, I think challenging an incumbent is always going to be an uphill battle. But I definitely feel that people are ready for a change from this politics as usual. We don't have to be the city of patronage and nepotism like we have a reputation of having. So we can really get out from these old family dynasties. And I can tell you that here in the 33rd Ward, the people that I'm talking to, they're ready for that change.
And in terms of where your campaign is now, so I know that you have to get a certain number of signatures to get on the ballot. Are we there yet? How's all this going?
Yeah, great question. So we actually start to gather signatures on August 28th. And so we'll have all the volunteers we can muster hitting the streets that day to get about 500 is the minimum that you need. Of course, we'll be going for about 3 to 4 times that number because we expect challenges. And that will carry on through September and October. And the signatures, the first day we can turn them in is on November 19th.
All right, so check out katie2019.com. That is your website. We will check in with you along the way to see what this whole process is like, because I think what you're saying is, you know, hey, look, if you want to get involved, you should. And that's the great thing about the political process. But sometimes we get discouraged because we hear about the bad stuff, and there's a lot of it, but there's also a lot of good that we have to know about, too. So we'll check in with you along the way as you continue on to February. The end of February is the municipal election here in Chicago. Katie Siraki is the candidate for 33rd Ward Alderman. Again, check out katie2019.com. Katie, thanks so much for talking today. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Mike. I appreciate it as well.
And again, we will check in with the campaign because we are outside the loop. And let's face it, most of us don't run for alderman, so maybe we don't know what the process is like. Stay tuned, because in the coming weeks, we will go behind the scenes of Katie's campaign. You are listening to Outside the Loop. I am Mike Steven right here on 720 WGN. WGN. Good morning. Mike Steven here with you on Outside the Loop. Welcome to the program. Right now, listening to some local tunes from the band Stardust Encounter. They had a show last night over at the Elbow Room in Chicago. Their EP release show. You can check out StardustEncounter.bandcamp.com. If you'd like more info on this band and check out when they are playing live. Each week I love to feature local music. This week, hearing some tunes from Stardust Encounter. And occasionally in the Chicago Reader, you will see the column, The Secret History of Chicago Music. It is hand-drawn by local musician, music historian, and artist Plastic Crime Wave. We also call him Steve Krakow. The strip profiles a local musician or a band who never quite made it to the big time. So right now, let's go ahead and dim those lights. Let's fire up the old hi-fi as we travel to Chicago's Ukrainian Village neighborhood and enter
The Secret History of Chicago Music.
I should be happy, but I'm sad and blue.
Back here once again in the lair, the apartment of Steve Krakow, also known as Plastic Crime Wave, and we are just getting soulful this week with Marvin Smith. Steve, you profile Marvin Smith in your Secret History of Chicago Music column,
And he sounds tasty. His vocals.
I mean, he really is kind of like a very shining example of Chicago soul. You know, like in a perfect world, you'd hear about, you know, maybe not on a Curtis Mayfield level, but like Syl Johnson, all these sort of classic vocalists, you know, from Chicago. He's definitely in that class.
Yeah, he sounds great, and most of us probably have never heard of Marvin Smith from Arkansas originally, right?
Yeah, Palestine, Arkansas.
Ooh, okay.
Who knew? Palestine, Arkansas?
There are at least two.
Yeah, but he did move to the West Side when he was very young, and, you know, did the archetypal singing on street corners and in choir at the church and stuff, like probably some, like, kind of doo-wop and got his chops, and he joined this band, like, right out of high. He went to Crane High School.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right off of the Eisenhower.
Yeah. Right out of school, he joined this band, the El Dorados, who I guess went through, like, three lead singers before he joined up. But they had, like, just a little bit of success, so he moved to the Bay Area for, like, a minute, but then he was pretty much back in Chicago quickly. They had all these weird, like, legal problems. They couldn't use the name, so they were, like, the Four El Dorados. And then they were just the Tempos, and I don't think any of it really took off, and he came back to Chicago. And he went to high school at Crane with Major Lance.
Really?
Who knew, right?
Yeah.
And Major Lance hooked him up with this producer guy, Carl Davis, who... I asked one guy who was like a soul expert. I'm like, how many records did that guy produce? And he's like, how many blades of grass are on the White House lawn? That was his response. James Porter. You probably know James Porter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was his response. And
nice.
He produced just so many like soul records that it's just I didn't even look at his Discogs page. It must be insane. So he hooked him up with this band, The Artistics, who had also gone through all these lead singers. So he hooked up with... And those guys had like just a little bit of local success. And when he joined, they had a bit more.
Okay. And what year are we talking here?
This is like early 60s. Early 60s, we're talking here. But a few kind of charted. Get My Hands on Some Lovin', which Marvin Gaye wrote.
Oh, cool. Yeah,
who knew?
Yeah.
But then he really wanted to be a solo artist. He felt, you know, so he went over to Brunswick Records, which is what the Chilites and all these bands were on, where Carl Davis produced a ton more stuff. Joined up with them. The Artistics, like, followed him over to Brunswick, and he basically concurrently was recording with the Artistics and by himself, and the sessions he did himself did okay, but the song he did with that was billed to the Artistics was like an international hit.
And what song was that?
I'm Gonna Miss You.
I'm Gonna Miss You.
Something insanely simple as that. But, I mean, that is considered like one of the classic soul records from Chicago. Northern soul, as a lot of people call it, which is a very strange genre because it does not refer to any sort of region in the United States. It actually refers to Northern England, where all these songs became kind of like hits with the youth in the late 70s and going into the 80s. And currently, all this sort of like generation of sort of like almost like mod kids, where they really liked American soul. And some of these songs actually became hits in the UK in the late 70s, and they call it Northern soul.
Northern soul.
And some Northern soul records that there's like 2 to 3 known copies of are worth thousands of dollars. You find one of those in the wild, you are set for a while. Because the fans are obsessive and
yeah.
have money. And stuff. But then there's Motown songs that are Northern Soul songs that are common as heck, you know? So it's sort of, it's a weird genre.
Yeah, so Marvin Smith, he's playing a lot. He's playing all over Chicago. What happens then as we progress in the 20th century?
Well, he still tried for that solo career, and he did go over to I guess I didn't even know this. There was a division of Curtis Mayfield's label was Curtum, and there was a division of Curtum called Mayfield Records. Jeez. I didn't know it till I saw the label, and I was like, wow, there was a Mayfield. So Curtis actually signed him, but it was 69, and that's right when Curtis's solo career was coming up. And I think he was kind of like, eh, I can't really bother promote this right now. He recorded all this stuff. It failed. He recorded one last single, I think, in 74, and he basically retired. That was it.
Wow. You know,
for him in the industry. But, like I said, this Northern Soul crowd is so obsessive. He goes over to the UK and he plays these, like, Northern Soul groovy weekender things where they know and love his songs. But, you know, he also still plays. There's been Artistics reunions every once in a while that he plays with sometimes. And the last gig I could find that he played was he actually did a Mother's Day show at Buddy Guy's Legends in 2016.
Nice.
So that was just a couple years ago.
So he's still doing it.
He's still doing it. And then I actually noticed, too, this is probably a little earlier, he did a show at the Dark Room. Do you remember that place?
Yeah, Chicago?
Yeah, Chicago Avenue.
Are you serious?
Yeah, and you know, I think I vaguely remember that, but I don't know if I knew who he was. I knew like a sort of legendary, sort of obscure soul guy was playing. I think they got him a backup band. I can't remember who exactly was involved. I don't know if it was Numero Group or some label like that.
Does that place still exist anymore?
No. So gone. Yeah. So gone. It's so gone. It was always a weird place. I played there a couple times.
I think I played there too, actually.
Yeah. It was just like, it was just always different. Like, dance techno night. Oh, okay. Blues night. Psychedelic night. They never really had, I mean, that's cool that they were open to all things, but I feel like they never really had a sort. It was sort of like a dance club, clubby
club. Called like a club in there.
Clubby club. Yeah, that is, I like to call it. They kind of did rock and other stuff too. So, I feel like it just never really cement, but it was there a while.
Yeah, it was. Sure, yeah, sure, sure. All right, Marvin Smith, so possibly, you know, maybe you can catch him.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, look, I mean, you probably have a better chance if you go over to the UK, you know, where they're flying him in to play one of these Northern Soul events.
Aren't you big in the UK?
Japan.
Japan. Yes, I understand. Yes, I understand. Yes. So am I. Well, Marvin Smith profiled in this week's Secret History of Chicago Music. Check it out. It is free. It's in the Chicago Reader, so pick up a copy. Or you could go to chicagoreader.com and check out what Steve Krakow has beautifully hand-drawn. It's a work of art, and the research that goes into it, it's great. Steve, thank you so much, as always, for having us over here, and you are so soulful.
And remember, if you find those rare Northern Soul singles, give me a call. I'll take them off your hands, okay? We got a struggling artist over here.
I thought I had a love I could count on.
Struggling artist, Steve Krakow. Thank you, sir. Marvin Smith sounds really nice on a Saturday morning. Be sure to check out what Steve is doing. Like I said, in the Reader, it's free, it's great, and chicagoreader.com.
When you said you didn't love.
Oh, sounds so good. We'll take a short break and be right back. You are listening to Outside the Loop. Mike Steven here along with you on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Mike Steven wrapping up the 616th edition of Outside the Loop. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks to Colin for producing. Thanks to Domati for doing news. And Bob Ferguson is our engineer. Domati, how did the show end up? I know you were kind of, you know, iffy halfway.
It ended perfectly.
That's the right answer. Yes. That's the right answer. Lou?
It's beautiful.
What was wrong with the end of the show?
I asked Domati at 6:30. I'm like, Domati, how's the show going?
I gave him a...
Oh, you mean like you were asking his opinion during like a break?
Well, no, it was on the air.
Oh. Were you concerned it wasn't going well?
No, I saw Domati in the monitor, and he was looking like, I don't know, he wasn't really into it. So I asked Domati, I'm like, Domati, what do you think of the show? And he was like, you know? So I guess we pulled it out there.
Domati, I don't want to, you know, go too much into it, but Domati's a young man.
Yeah, right? He is. But he's smart.
I'm going to say that he was about your age when he had to come in early in the morning to work, like he has to come in to work now.
Yeah, right? I was younger.
You were younger.
Because Domati, well,
I know how old Domati is.
Yeah, don't put it out. I'm getting up there.
All right. Trust me. You're not getting up there, my friend.
I'm losing my millennial card fast.
Yeah, right. Oh, don't worry. Lindsay's been playing the millennial card now forever. She's like, I'm a millennial. I'm like, okay. Whatever you say, dear.
Hey, are you going to Lollapalooza today, Lou?
My daughter, Mallory, is at Lollapalooza all 4 days, you know?
That's a lot. I told Lindsay this morning.
She posted a picture with, you know, a cute picture of she and her friends, and evidently glitter is a thing.
I don't know what that's about.
What's that about?
At Lollapalooza, glitter's all over.
Like, all over. There's glitter, and my daughter, Carmen, who's out in California, was on, you know, we have a family text called Six Pack that we all text each other. And so there's a, you know, like a picture of her and a friend, cute picture, just them smiling, you know, because I'm the dad, and I'm like, everything okay? And she sends me a picture. Yeah, everything's great.
Right, right.
And my daughter, Carmen, says, glitter. Oh, my gosh, glitter, you know, she says. And I go, and that shirt's a little too low.
That's Dad Lou coming up.
A good show.
Thank you. And thank you for listening to Outside the Loop. I will talk to you again next time right here on 720 WGN.